that I surprise myself by how much I want to know this woman, not just fuck her. The pants don't come off with the shoes on, I tell her, and by the time I've removed the second shoe, she's standing in front of me, every creamy, white, naked inch of her. She grabs it and tosses it. Now the pants, she orders, making it clear that she's no submissive, that she can hold her own, and I fucking love it. Or the shirt. I reach for her hips and walk her between my legs. You've distracted me, I tell her, my lips brushing her belly, my tongue drawing a circle. She trembles beneath my mouth and I glance up at her. You're owned when you can think of nothing but the person you're with, nothing but what they might do to you now, and in the next moment. I twine the string at her hips and my fingers, or where they might lick, kiss, or touch. I drag her panties down her legs and then lower my mouth to her sex, where I let my breath tease her. Tell me to lick you, I order. Her fingers curl around the material over my shoulders. No. I bite my bottom lip and shake my head. That's too bad, because I really wanted to know how you taste. I nip her hip, and when she gives a surprised yelp, I lave the wound with my tongue, glancing up at her. Do you want me to? Yes. Say it, Lori. Lick me, you asshole. I laugh. Asshole? You're teasing me. I'm just being sure I know what you want. You want me to lick you, I just want to know where. I'm not saying what you want me to say. She also isn't thinking about whatever it was that made her need this escape. I don't own her yet this night, but we're getting there. And so I push harder. Too much of a lady, are you? I could fix that if I had at least one more night, but since I don't, I lick her clit. She sucks in air and stabs fingers into my hair and holds on. I smile and lick her again, suckling her into my mouth, my fingers sliding through the wet heat of her body, but I'm not going to let her come. Not yet. I kiss her belly and she pulls at my shirt. I wrap my arms around her backside and drag her into my lap. By the time she's straddling me, we're already kissing again, but she hasn't given up on my shirt. Take it off, she orders, unhooking two of the buttons. At this point, I'm all about having her body pressed to mine, and I reach behind me and pull it over my head, tossing it behind us. A moment later, I'm molding her close, my hand wide between her shoulder blades, the other on her breast while my mouth suckles and licks at her nipple. She arches into my mouth and I hold her. But I still don't own her. I still don't have her where I want her. Where she wants to be. I tangle fingers into her hair, drag her gaze to mine. I want to spank you. She stiffens and presses her hands to my shoulders. What? I know from her reaction this is new to her, terrifying to her. It's pleasure. It's not pain, but it's the ultimate escape. Nothing else exists. Trust me, sweetheart, it's not a beating. It's erotic. It's sexy. It's good. I can't even believe I'm having this conversation. I caress her breast, my thumb stroking her cheek, my lips brushing her lips. We don't have to do this, I say, my mouth next to hers. But I promise you, we will both be so hot and so ready to fuck when it's done, that we will be all over each other. I can't believe I'm actually considering this. I pull back to look at her. Say yes, I urge. You won't be sorry.
Chapter 7. Lori. My heart is racing, and I am both aroused and terrified. A spanking? Why am I even considering this? Why? It's impossible that I would, and yet I am. I really am, but it's crazy. I don't know you, I whisper. I can't.
You can,
he says, cupping my head and sliding his cheek to mine as if he feels my need for this tiny moment of visual privacy.
It will be good,
he whispers by my ear, his breath a warm tease on my neck.
So damn good, sweetheart.
Says the man giving this spanking, says the one
in control,
he asks, pulling back to look at me.
No, I'm not in control. You are. You decide if I do this. You decide if you want that kind of escape.
I'm not into pain. I'm sorry, but...
It's not about pain, Lori. It will sting at most. It's about escape. It's about the freedom to be vulnerable for just a little window of time when you don't dare any other time.
That he knows this about me is unbelievable. He doesn't know me. How can he know this?
It's about the adrenaline and the high and the way we're into what is happening right here and now that nothing else exists.
And if I don't want to do this?
We fuck and we enjoy it.
He says simply, no hesitation in him, and I sense that he means it. There's no pressure. I really feel that from this man. And if I do?
Then I'll make sure you enjoy it, sweetheart. Really enjoy it.
This is intimate. It's control I am handing him that I wouldn't allow anyone I know, and with good reason. I know them. They could use it against me. They could twist it and me with it and... I'm not... He kisses me.
Then we won't.
He says softly. Going to see you again. I finish. He pulls back and arches a brow.
But you'll let me spank you? Is that what you're saying?
I answer in my own head first. No consequences. No names. Him in control. Not me. For once, not me. Do it. I whisper, my heart about to explode in my chest. But don't give me time to think about it. Don't. He kisses me. A deep, long, drugging kiss before he says,
I won't just do it. That's punishment. That's pain. That's not how a spanking for pleasure works. It's erotic play, and thinking about it, anticipating it, is part of the high.
No room for anything but here and now, I say, repeating his words, embracing those words.
Exactly.
He agrees.
And we both know that's what you're looking for tonight. And I get it, Lori. That's why people play these kinds of games, for pleasure and escape.
So you make a habit of playing these games?
Not a habit.
He assures me.
But I was a member of a club right out of law school, he says. It was an intense time for me for many reasons. I needed an uncomplicated release that didn't fuck with my head afterward.
It feels like a personal confession I shouldn't welcome, but I do. I'm curious about him, more than I wish I was curious about him.
This kind of play has a place.
He gives me a lift of his lips, a hint of a smile.
It works for many of us who need control, and therefore fail miserably at drug and alcohol abuses.
He scoots us to the edge of the chair and then takes a knee in front of me.
We're both going to want to fuck when it's over. That means I need to put that condom on now.
He brushes his lips over mine and stands up, leaving me naked and on the edge of my soon-to-be spanked seat, quite literally. I have a moment when I want to fold my arms across my chest, but I force myself to resist the urge. Tonight is about being daring, unapologetically in charge of my desires, and I don't feel out of control. I said yes. I made this decision. I want to experience new things and do so with this man. Cole reaches into his back pocket and produces his wallet, removing a foil package before tossing the wallet on the coffee table. I grip the cushion on either side of me, aware that my breasts are thrust forward, aware that his eyes rake over them. So aware that my thighs squeeze together while I wait for what comes next, anticipate what comes next. My gaze lifts to his, and what I find is not dominant alpha attitude, despite the fact that he's naturally dominant. I don't find this revelation of a spanking to create a new dynamic between us of dominant and submissive. Instead, he gives me a wink, his lips curving ever so slightly.
Quid pro quo, right, sweetheart? Now you get to watch me undress.
I'm surprised at how easily I laugh. A little late, I say, but yes.
I'll make it up to you.
He promises, making fast work of his button and zipper before sliding his pants and his underwear down in one long motion. Then he's all mine to view, long, lean muscle and rippling abs. And then, of course, there is his impressive erection jutting forward between us. My gaze jerks from it to him, and he arches a brow.
Do I get your approval?
He asks. I'm still deciding, I reply, surprised again at how easily I tease him, how at ease I am while naked with a stranger who's about to spank me. I'll put the condom on for you and let you know after I'm done.
Oh no, sweetheart,
he says, tearing open the package and dropping it on the floor.
I'm willing to admit my weaknesses, and your hand on my cock will be one of them. You touch me like that, and I'll forget the spanking and fuck you now.
He rolls on the condom into place, and in an instant, he's pulled me to my feet, his hands tangled in my hair in that erotic, rough way he does. And I like it. I like it so much that I am instantly weak in the knees.
Have you changed your mind?
He asks, his hand cupping my backside, his erection at my hip. No, I say, tangling my fingers in the dark wisp of hair on his chest, and no less gently than he holds my own hair. I have not changed my mind.
Good,
he says.
Then here's what's going to happen. I'm going to kiss you, and when I'm done, I'm going to sit down on the chair. You're going to sit down next to me on your knees, facing my lap.
Can we stop talking now, please? I demand. Can we just... He kisses me, his tongue licking into my mouth, and it's like something wild is unleashed in me. I want him. I want him now, and I press into him, hold on to him, touch him. I don't even remember the moment he sits down and drags me with him, or how my knees settle against his thigh, because he's still kissing me, and his hand is on my breast, and mine is on his thigh. But then his lips part mine, and his teeth scrape my lip, and he says,
You're going to lay down and cross my lap, sweetheart.
I am, I ask, and then quickly amend with, I am. And with those words, I can feel the adrenaline coursing through me, the high, the rush, the fear that is a bit like being on a roller coaster a moment before the plunge. I hate roller coasters, but I don't hate this.
And then,
he continues,
I'm going to take my time. I'm going to make sure you're ready to come, on the edge of orgasm to the point you almost forget the spanking. And that's when it's going to happen.
He presses his cheek to mine.
Three times. I'll warn, and then it will happen, with no pause in between. Count with me, and you'll know what to expect. Understand, sweetheart?
Sweetheart. He keeps calling me that, and I like it too much. Yes, I say. He pulls back and studies me, as if he needs to confirm I'm really in this all the way. He must see what I feel that I am, that I can't turn away from this and don't want to turn away, because he kisses me again. And then he strokes my cheek with tenderness that defies what he's about to do.
Now,
he orders softly. Now, now, now. The word radiates through me. Now. He's going to spank me now, and I wait for panic to overwhelm me, but it doesn't come. Yes, I'm nervous. Yes, I'm even a little scared, but I'm tingling all over, warm, aroused, more aroused than I've ever been in my entire life. I lower myself across his lap. Chapter 8. Lori. He really does own me tonight. That's the thought I have as I lie across his lap, his hand coming down on my lower back. He owns me when I didn't believe it to be possible. But it's one night. It is the escape he's promised, the freedom to not have to hold the world up on my shoulders, to not think. Just this night with him. The room is silent, and I can hear my own heartbeat thundering in my ears, the pulse of heat, adrenaline, and arousal, almost too much to tolerate. Cole's fingers flex on my back, and I expect his next destination to be my backside, but it is not. He caresses a path up my spine, goosebumps lifting in the wake of this gentle touch, and then his palm flattens firmly between my shoulder blades.
Relax,
he orders softly.
I'll tell you when.
Promise? I ask.
Yes,
he says,
his voice as firm as the hand between my shoulders. I promise. Relax. Lie all the way down.
Only then do I realize that I'm on my hands and knees, as if I'm about to crawl away at any moment. I inhale and exhale as I ease to my elbows.
Good,
he says softly. His approval oddly arousing when I don't seek approval from men. But I never thought I'd seek a spanking either, and this wasn't a heat-of-the-moment thing. He asked. I said yes. He shifts his body, reaching for something, I think, and right when I'm going to twist around to figure out what, music begins to play. Classical music. I don't know classical music, which makes me unable to identify the song, but my mind tries to place it as a match to Cole in some way, but I cannot. All I know is that, like the man, it's a match to me right now. The piano notes lift in the air just enough to soften my heartbeat, and I have no idea why, but this helps. I feel myself ease into the cushion, into him, into Cole, whose name I didn't want to know. His hand moves and I'm instantly on alert, on edge, but not afraid. I really expect to be afraid, but there's just something about the way this man has handled this, the way he is, that doesn't stir this type of feeling in me. He caresses a path down my back again, fingers trailing my spine, and then he's cupping one of my cheeks, stroking the other. My fingers curl into my palms, my nipples aching with inattention. My backside begins to warm, and Cole's palm caresses and caresses some more before he slides fingers along the seam of my body into the wet heat of my sex. I suck in air as the sensation of his touch spirals through my body, and when he begins tracing my clit with one hand, one finger, he also begins a slow pat over the top of my sex with the others. It's nothing anyone has ever done to me before, but it's good. It's really good, each pat rocking me with spikes of pleasure. I am wet. I am aroused. I am so on edge, so ready to come that I've forgotten everything but wanting more, needing more. I arch into the touch, and I'm shocked when Cole's hand flattens on my backside, his finger leaving my clit, when he just stops and does nothing. Seconds tick by, and I gasp out, "Cole!" in desperation. As if that is what he's waited for, he replies with,
"Three counts, remember? Now, Lori, are you ready?"
"No." My breath blasts from my lungs. "Yes, I mean yes."
"Now,"
he says again. And this time now means now. His hand comes down on my backside and it's as he promised. A sting, I feel, arching my back with the impact, and already his palm returns. "Two." I breathe out, and no sooner do I say that word than I feel the last burn of his palm. "Three." My sex clenches and I arch forward, but a moment later Cole is pulling me up and I'm straddling his lap, his fingers tangling in my hair.
"Are you okay?"
he asks. "Yes. Yes, I'm..." His mouth closes down on mine, and the minute his tongue licks into my mouth, I moan and sink into the kiss. I didn't want to need anything tonight, but I need this kiss. I need him. I need... He lifts me, and I shift with him, wanting what he seeks, wanting him inside me. Cole balances my weight, lifting me, and, oh God, yes, he presses inside me, stretching me, pleasing me. He pulls me down onto his erection even as he thrusts up and hard. I grip his shoulders, and when our eyes meet, there is a pulse between us that radiates through my body. He doesn't feel like a stranger. He doesn't feel like he was supposed to feel, and yet he feels perfect. He moves and I move, and we begin to thrust and pump, and his hands cup my breasts, lips on my lips, on my neck, on my nipple, tugging it while my body rocks against that tug. I can't get enough of him, or move fast enough, or deep enough. He folds me into his body, strong arms holding me, and he kisses me. We continue to rock and rock some more and more, and then I'm there, so very there, falling into him and the pleasure, tumbling over the edge until my body stiffens, my sex clenching around his thick erection.
I bury my face in his neck and he drives into me. A low, guttural groan slides from his lips, and I quake with release, shuddering all over to the point that I can't breathe. I lose time. I lose the ability to freely think or move. There is just this man and intense pleasure. This man that holds me through every last spasm and doesn't let go, not even when I collapse into him, against him. I feel him sink deeper into the cushions with me, the two of us easing into the aftermath of what just happened together. That's when I start to tremble again, for an entirely new reason I don't understand. A wave of emotion overwhelming me. It's not regret. It's not fear. It's something indescribable. I try to pull away from Cole, but he tightens his hold on me.
Easy, sweetheart.
Cole murmurs.
It's the endorphins you're feeling from the spanking. It'll pass.
He eases me back and rubs my arms.
It'll pass.
Soon, I hope. I whisper, gripping his arms.
It will.
He promises.
Just breathe through it. It happens after the high, especially when it's new to you. Take another deep breath.
Inhaling and exhaling, my lashes lower with the trickle of air from my lips. Cole folds me against him again, and before I know his intent, he stands up, taking me with him, and I quickly grab his neck, forced to hold on until we're in the bathroom, and he's setting me down on the sink.
Hang tight, sweetheart,
he says, and walks toward the toilet, tosses the condom, pulls on a pair of sweats, and then grabs the hotel robe from a hook and wraps it around me, holding on to the lapels.
Better now?
He asks. Yes, I say, realizing now that I'm no longer shaking. Yes, it's passing. I'm better.
Good.
He gives me an inquiring look, his blue eyes probing but gentle.
Did you like it?
This is where I should feel awkward about the question, about being spanked by this man, but somehow I just don't. Yes, I did. I'm surprised that I did.
I'm not,
he says,
or I wouldn't have suggested it.
Why aren't you surprised?
Because the danger of never letting go is you lose yourself. When you lose yourself, you lose what you're after. Why you're doing what you're doing. Been there, done that.
I want to ask more. I want to understand. I want to know why he saw this in me, but I'm treading on tomorrow territory, and he doesn't give me a chance anyway. His hands come down on my waist, and he sets me on the floor in front of him, tying the belt around the robe for me.
Are you hungry? I'm hungry. Let's order room service.
I want to say yes. Why does this man make me want to say yes to everything? This is where I'm supposed to leave.
Says who?
He asks. Me, I said.
One night,
he says.
Not 2 hours, which means our one night is not over. I leave tomorrow morning. What do you have to lose by staying?
What do I have to lose? Myself, I think. My career, my independence. We had one condom, I point out.
And as you can tell, I can be creative.
His lips curve.
When I'm well fed, stay, Lori. I want you to stay.
His voice is low, rough, compelling.
Forget what you planned to do. Do what we both want you to do. Stay with me.
I should say no, but I don't. Yes, I say, because nothing has changed. He might kiss like trouble, but this is one night. And trouble can't touch me tomorrow. Chapter 9. Lori. Cole's response to my agreement to stay longer is to kiss me hard and fast, his lips firm and warm.
Good,
he says,
because I'm not done with you, not even close.
Heat rushes through me with that promise, and he laces his fingers with mine.
Come on, let's order that food.
He turns and holds onto my hand, almost as if he's afraid I'll run for the door. And the truth is, it feels good to have someone hold on to me, to want me. The kind of feelings I can't afford, not beyond tonight. But I can't help but revel in them here, now,
just a little longer. He guides me to the sitting area, and we settle on the couch, no space between us. He keeps me close, our legs aligned, and when he opens a drawer on the coffee table and removes a menu, he sets it on our joined legs, skipping to a photo.
I highly recommend the lasagna,
he says, pointing to what looks like 2,000 calories of perfection, while I think he's about double that or more.
The chef trained in Italy,
he continues,
and he does Italy better than Italy, and that's hard to do.
You've been here often if you've evaluated the chef's resume. He makes a frustrated sound.
Too often,
he says.
I'm ready to be out of here.
He's ready to be out of here. He's ready to be home. Tonight is tonight. It's what I want. It's right for me and right for him. But I still find myself wanting to ask, where is home? Why is he here? A case? Family? What? His finger caressing my cheek brings my attention back to him.
But, he adds, an excellent chef makes the stay here more bearable.
He flips the menu to another page.
The pizza is authentic Italian as well and excellent.
Lasagna really does sound perfect, I say, and his second authentic Italian comment inspires me to vow to one day visit Italy and compare this meal to the ones I'll enjoy there.
All right then,
he says, sticking the menu back in the drawer.
Lasagna it is.
He reaches over the arm of the couch, grabs the hotel phone from the end table, and requests our order. The angle of his shoulder resting in a way that exposes a tattoo I can't believe I haven't noticed until now. Oh my god. It's a paw print that reads, Toby, 1996. This arrogant, powerful, impossibly good-looking, and apparently successful man loved an animal to the point of tattooing his body with his memory.
20 minutes,
he says, settling back down next to me and surprising me by kissing me.
Do you like wine?
Yes. Who was Toby?
My childhood dog. He died the year I went to college.
I love that you got a tattoo for Toby.
He was a good friend. The best. Let me grab the wine.
He stands and crosses to a doorway, disappearing inside and returning as he pulls on a white t-shirt, while I enjoy every second of the stretch and tug of muscles.
Do you have a wine preference?
He asks, hands settling on his hips. I have a wide palate for $40 a bottle in underwines, I say. Anything is fine. He laughs. It's a good laugh. Warm, relaxed, sincere.
All right then,
he says, crossing the room toward the built-in cabinet behind the chair where we'd played his game, where he'd spanked me. I'm trying to understand this man who is rich, powerful, and kinky, but also has a paw print to commemorate his love for his furry friend. Do you have a dog now? I ask.
No,
he says, returning to join me with two wine glasses and a corked bottle of wine in hand.
Dogs deserve time and love that I don't have to give.
The same reason I don't have a dog, I think. Well, that and I live in a closet. He sits down next to me.
This is a blend,
he says, joining me.
It's smooth and easy, but I have a Pinot and a Merlot if you'd prefer.
Like I said, I have broad
$40 a bottle or under palate.
He supplies, giving a chuckle and pulling the cork.
There are wines to taste and wines to drink. The expensive ones tend to drink like hell.
He fills my glass.
Try it.
He hands it to me. Is it under $40?
You tell me. Taste it.
Why do I feel like I'm being tested?
Because you are. Most people can't tell expensive wine from inexpensive wine.
But you can? I ask, accepting the glass.
I'm pretty fluent in wine.
I'm not a good drinker, I warn. You should know that before I drink, and you have to wake me up to send me home. I fall asleep because I catch myself before I start talking about my schedule. I just fall asleep.
I'll do my part to keep you awake,
he promises, giving me a wink that does funny things to my stomach.
Try the wine,
he encourages again. Feeling oddly shy when shy is not my thing, I cut my gaze and sip the rich wine, its slightly sweet flavor exploding on my tongue. It's excellent, I say. I like it.
But is it under $40?
He challenges. No, I say, and I only know that because you're you and we're here in this fancy room.
You don't know me well enough to make that statement. When you do, I'll ask you again to sum me up.
When I do?
If you do,
he says. And before I can let the possibilities of the word if sink in, he's moved on.
It's $55, close to 40.
He fills his glass and corks the bottle. I glance at the bottle that reads Maria's Vineyards and Magnificant, an obvious intentional misspelling. Is it really $55?
It is indeed,
he says, sipping the wine.
I discovered it a few years ago, and I've been a fan ever since.
I sip again and set my glass down. When I was sizing you up at the bar tonight, I'd have called you a whiskey guy.
I like whiskey,
he says.
Scotch is my preferred drink, but wine is in my blood. My family owns a winery. Actually,
he corrects, cutting his gaze.
I own the damn winery.
The bitterness in his tone is impossible to miss and tells me that he's recently inherited, and not just a winery, problems. I know all about problems. You recently inherited the winery, I assume.
It and more,
he says, and I get the impression the more might not be all good, a situation I can relate to far too well.
My father died a few months ago,
he adds. More and more I see the ways we might be drawn to each other, and I wonder if there is a kind of kindred spirit one knows by merely bumping into a person on the street. And your mother? I ask cautiously, aware that this might be as delicate a subject with him as it is with me.
Also gone, and a long time ago,
he says, shifting the conversation to me.
Are your parents alive?
I reach for my wine and sip, considering my answer. This isn't what I signed up for. I didn't want to talk about me. And yet, I want to talk about him. I want to know more about this man that I actually trusted to spank me.
Quid pro quo,
he says, seeming to read my mind.
I'm naked. You're naked, remember?
All too well, I think, as he adds,
give me something, Lori. I don't even know your last name.
And he won't. My mother's a nurse. She's alive. My father died last year. I wait for the typical, I'm sorry, how did he die? I hate those words, and I hate that question, which is why I didn't say them to him. I steel myself and sip my wine.
I'm not going to ask,
he says softly. I glance up at him. What? His eyes are warm with understanding, blue flecked with brilliant amber.
I get it. I hate the I'm sorry that people always offer, and I hate being asked how my parents died. So thank you for saying neither of those things.
We do understand each other, I decide then. It has to be why I was drawn to him. No matter how much he's pushed for the conquest tonight, he's not a relationship person. I'm different, as he called me, because I'm not either. Women want his money as well, he'd said so, but I do not. I want my own, that I earn.
And since I seem to only be able to bribe you for what I want,
he continues,
and what I want is to know more about you, I'll do what I never do. I'll tell you my story. My mother died in a car accident when I was 18. She was driving erratically after she'd left the house because she was fighting with my father over his mistress and hit an embankment and flipped. Cancer killed my father. As for the other question that I hate to be asked, are you okay? I've heard that a lot these past 6 months since he died. The answer I want to give to people but have the decorum to know I cannot is that I'm fucking great. I hated the bastard.
I study him a moment, understanding filling me. You're an only child. His eyes narrow on me.
And do you know this how?
You hated your father, but he didn't hate you, I say, and so you inherited.
Very good, counselor, he says. I might need to insist on your last name just to ensure I don't accept a case against you. I don't want to ruin my perfect record.
His cell phone rings, and since his pants are on the floor near his feet, he grabs them, pulling out his phone. I think of all the nights I've worked at the restaurant, fearing a call that my mother was sick, and even with her return to work at a hospital of all places, I dread a call. Even now, I dread my phone ringing instead of his. Cole glances at his display and sets his cell on the table. Do you need to take your call? I ask.
It's an asshole, he says, and I don't work for assholes.
The doorbell rings and he sets down his glass.
That will be dinner, and not soon enough for me.
He heads toward the door, his stride long and confident. Everything about this man is power and grace, and yet he doesn't overwhelm me like someone else I once knew and knew too well. Cole doesn't constantly seem to be pulling my strings. But then, as one of my law professors said, everyone is on their best behavior while trying to be naked and well-fucked. Cole's words come back to me.
I might need to insist on your last name.
Because he doesn't want to face me in court, but there is no issue there. I'm not a lawyer, whereas he's in possession of a winning record, the rewards of hard work falling into place, while mine have years to be foreseen. My gaze catches on my skirt, and the realization that the awkward goodbye is coming hits me. I need to be dressed. I need to be ready. Actually, I need to leave before I do something stupid with this man, like stay the night, like give him my last name, like get involved in what won't hurt him but could my career. I can't risk becoming distracted by a man who has his career while I have a long way until I have mine. I stand up and dart for my skirt. Chapter 10. Lori. I've barely had time to straighten after picking up my skirt, and somehow Cole is already walking back into the room.
Don't even think about putting that on unless you just want me to take it off of you.
We don't have a condom, I remind him. He sets the bag in his hand on the table and steps in front of me.
We have lasagna and my tongue, sweetheart,
he says, removing my skirt from my hand and kissing me.
And I have yet to prove my skills in that area.
I can't believe you just said that to me.
Because you're a virgin and so am I.
You're funny, I say.
Not usually, and not now. I'm quite serious, and adding to that, I can say with definitive certainty that my meal will taste better with you in that robe, naked beneath it.
His lips curve ever so slightly as he adds,
and so will yours. I'll show you.
My God. Somehow this man and his piercing blue eyes have turned my lasagna into the promise of an orgasm. He snags my hands and moves us toward the couch. I don't argue. How can I? I'm wet, and my nipples ache. I've never wanted lasagna so badly in my life. And according to my nose, there is deliciousness in that bag that will extend beyond the food. We sit down, and he glances over at me, smiles, and kisses my cheek. It's cute, and sweet, and sexy, and just so many things I don't expect, especially after he just promised to show me skills involving his tongue. The man must keep a jury seduced, confused, and seduced all over again, and in spades.
You okay with wine?
He asks.
I have water in the fridge under the bar.
Wine is fine, I say and reach for my glass. He opens the bag.
I have them bring my food in takeout containers,
he says, setting two foil-wrapped bowls on the table, along with a bag of bread.
Otherwise, their obsession with picking up the trays becomes incessant.
Which tells me he's a private person, focused on his work when he's here, or whichever woman is with him. And maybe I'm a fool, but that doesn't feel like Cole to me. Despite his "I fuck when I wanna fuck" comment, I really don't believe he's a man whore any more than I'm easy because I came here tonight. He offers me a fork.
Try the lasagna.
Thank you, I say, accepting it. For dinner.
Thank you.
He surprises me by saying, for what?
I needed to slow down. I needed tonight, too.
He needed tonight, too. His words seem to hang in the air between us, a confession of sorts, when I don't think he's a man of confessions or apologies. I don't know why he's allowed me this intimacy, But then he is intelligent and instinctive. He has to know I've allowed him much tonight that I allow no one else. He motions to the food.
Try it,
he says softly. And it's almost as if he's not talking about the food, though I don't know what else he could be talking about. I nod and take a bite. And an explosion of delicious spices, cheese, and tomato sauce awakens my taste buds. It's wonderful, I say. Amazing, actually.
It's something to look forward to when I'm here,
he says, taking a bite himself. I want to ask how often he's here, but it feels like that's a request to see him again that I can't afford to make. I need to finish climbing my ladder, so for now, I focus on his career. How does an asshole you won't defend get your personal cell phone number? I ask, thinking of his call earlier and sipping my wine.
Another asshole gave it to him,
he says, finishing off another bite of his food. And how does that asshole have your number? I ask, rolling cheese around my fork.
He works in my firm and saw dollar figures and nothing else.
And you don't? I ask, taking a bite.
Expensive as fuck, sweetheart.
He assures me, refilling his wine glass and then topping off mine. I assumed from this place we're in right now, I say, and I assume that means you're worth it.
Yes,
he says.
I am. Are you going to call me arrogant again?
Have you won the cases to back it up?
Yes,
he says again.
I have.
Then it's fact, not arrogance.
And you?
He asks.
How good are you, Lori?
He's hit that nerve I've been avoiding, and I cut my gaze, reaching for the wine and downing a big swallow. I really don't want to talk about my career.
You lost a case,
he assumes.
Is that what brought you here tonight? You can talk to me about it, I get it. I know this world. I'm a good choice.
Tonight isn't about my career, I say. But isn't it? Haven't I just lied without meaning to lie? What is tonight really about for me?
What are you trying to escape tonight?
He presses as if reading my mind. I down my wine and look at him. Am I on trial, counselor?
If you're never going to see me again, keep using me. Sex isn't all I'm good for.
We weren't supposed to get this personal.
I don't even know your last name,
he says.
You don't know mine. Let's call it therapy. Quid pro quo. I'll even go first.
He shoves his plate away.
Ask me anything.
I don't want to play this game, I say.
Ask me anything,
he insists. How many women have been in this room?
None, not with me. My turn, how many one-night stands have you had?
I already answered that, I say. None, ever, just you.
Why me?
He asks. No one else ever made me think I wanted to. I say honestly, without hesitation. My turn, who burned you? His eyes narrow.
Who says I was burned?
You hate cheaters.
Good observation and accurate. My father fucked around on my mother and pretty much ruined her. I was engaged when I was right out of law school and she fucked my best friend. Now they're married with three kids.
I sink back onto the cushion and pull my legs to my side, wondering if I dare ask what I want to ask. He leans into the cushion as well.
What do you want to know?
He asks. I decide to dare. Did you love her?
No,
he says easily.
I knew that even then, and so did she, but fucking around with my best friend, that was the wrong way to handle it.
He studies me a moment.
Your turn. Who burned you?
In the romance department? Me, for being stupid and probably young and infatuated.
An older man?
Yes, I say. And semi-famous, arrogant, and generally wrong for me, but I'm not heartbroken. I wasn't in love either. The muffled sound of my cell phone pings a text message. My phone, I say, straightening. I need my phone. I jolt to my feet and round the coffee table to grab my bag, only to run smack into Cole, who's apparently attempting to retrieve it for me. He catches my arms and gives me a mischievous look.
Always running into me.
Heat radiates up and down my arms where he holds me, the awareness between us electric, the heat too fierce to have recently been sated. I am, aren't I?
Yes, sweetheart,
he says, his voice packing a low, rough quality.
You are, but I'm not complaining. I like it.
He reaches down and scoops up my bag and sets it on the coffee table. Thank you, I say and quickly dig myself from my bag. I tab to the message and read the text from my mother. I have a surprise for your birthday. On shift, and I won't tell anyway. Love you. My birthday, which is only a week away and should have been celebrated with a law degree in my pocket and on my wall.
Something wrong?
Cole asks. I glance up at him. No, I say, stuffing my phone in the pocket of the robe. Nothing is wrong. He studies me, his eyes darkening and suddenly chilly.
You sure about that?
He's upset. He might even be angry. What just happened? I ask. He doesn't play those games he favors now. He's direct.
That message, he says. Your urgency to check your phone. Are you married, Lori?
I blanch, shocked, but quickly recover, and his concern is not without merit. No, I breathe out. No, God, no. My hands find the hard wall of his chest. I'm not that kind of person, Cole. I'm not a cheater. He doesn't reach for me. He doesn't touch me.
And yet you won't tell me anything about yourself.
It's a statement, not a question. I yank my hand back. It was my mother, who I worry about constantly since my father died, texting me about making me a cake, which is a big deal for reasons I won't try to explain. I don't even know why I told you that. I suddenly feel trapped, and I didn't even feel trapped when I was laying across his lap. I should leave. Yes, I'll leave. I grab my bag, about to step away from him, and he takes it from me, sets it on the table, and pulls me to him.
Don't go.
You just accused me.
I asked. You answered. I know lies when they're spoken. I believe you. That I do just makes me want to fuck you all over again.
Cole. His fingers slide into my hair, his mouth slanting over mine, his tongue pressing past my lips. I tell myself not to respond. I tell myself this is the end of the road for this night. But he kisses me with passion, with possessive, hungry passion, and he is big and wonderful, and he doesn't taste of anger or accusation. He tastes of wine, pleasure, and everything right about this night.
Do I taste like I want you to leave?
He asks again. You still taste like trouble, which is why if I had any sense, I would have left before now.
But you didn't. You haven't, and you shouldn't.
He doesn't give me time to reply. He scoops me up and carries me toward the bedroom, and in a few moments, I'm on the mattress with his big body over me, the heavy weight of him pressing against me. We don't have another condom.
I told you, he says. I'm resourceful.
He kisses me again, and with one delicious lick of his tongue, I moan and forget my objections, and soon, without regret, because it's not long before my robe is open and his mouth is on my nipple, and then my belly, and lower until his shoulders are parting my legs and his warm breath trickles over my sex. Cole, I whisper desperately when that touch of his mouth is just out of reach. He answers with a lick of my clit that sends sensation spiraling through me. I arch my hips and he teases me, his hands at my sides, his mouth pressing to my belly. Cole, I plead again. He glances up at me, his eyes simmering with the kind of relentless passion every woman wants to see in the man's eyes. The one she wants, the one she needs, the one that is trailing his tongue down my belly. And oh God, yes, he closes his mouth down on my nub and suckles. I grip the blankets and a panting, wild sound I don't recognize myself being capable of slips from my lips. He licks, teases, strokes, using his fingers, mouth, and of course his tongue until I'm right there on the edge. Everything fades but pleasure, and I don't come back up for air until I've trembled with release and Cole has pulled me into his arms. My head rests on his chest, and the steady thump of his heart is like a drug mixed with wine, food, and no sleep. I can't fight. My lashes lower, and I just need to rest my eyes a few minutes before I leave. I wake with heavy lids, blinking into a dimly lit room, the sound of a muffled male voice touching my ears.
I need the car here in exactly 1 hour. Right. Yes, that works.
Cole's voice. I sit up to find myself under the hotel bed sheets, naked beneath and alone. The bathroom door is shut, a light peeking from beneath it. Light is peeking through a nearby curtain. It's morning and I'm still here. I don't even remember deciding to stay. It's morning and either Cole and I say an awkward goodbye or we don't. In which case I have to tell him that I'm not an attorney. Then he'll find out what my life is and think I'm now staying for his money. Or I'll fall for him. I'm already falling for him and I'll get distracted, screw up my plans and end up heartbroken. I have to leave. I throw off the blankets and grab my phone from the nightstand, checking for messages that don't exist before dashing for my clothes. In a rush of movement, I'm dressed, though I can't find my panties, but that is just going to have to be okay. I settle my briefcase on my shoulder and stare at the bathroom door, regret filling me. I don't want to leave, but that is exactly why I have to leave. I need my Cinderella with a spanking fantasy to be fantasy worthy. I don't want to ruin it with real life. Regret settles in my belly. I plan to just leave, but a pad of paper on the nightstand catches my eyes. I walk to it and grab a pen before writing. Hello, and everything that followed was perfect. I didn't want to ruin perfect with a bad goodbye. Lori. I set the note in the center of the bed right when the shower turns off. Heart racing, I rush for the door, hurrying down the stairs. I picture him exiting the bedroom and reading the note, wondering what his reaction will be. Regret? Relief? Anger? Disappointment? By the time I step onto the elevator and sink against the wall for the ride, my only certainty is that despite my certainty, I will never see Cole again. I will never forget him either.
Chapter 11. Cole. I walk out of the bathroom with a towel around my waist to check on Lori and grab the doorframe at the sight of the empty bed. I don't have to call out her name to know that she's gone. I feel it, and I can't fucking explain why I feel it any more than I can explain why I want her more than I did before I fucked her. She's different. I wasn't wrong about that. I flip on the bedroom light and my eyes catch on a note on the pillow. I know what it says. Goodbye. But still, I cross the room with too much eagerness and grab it to read. Hello, and everything that followed was perfect. I didn't want to ruin perfect with a bad goodbye. Lori. I toss the damn note on the bed and consider my options for all of 30 seconds before walking back to the bathroom and picking up my phone. I punch in my assistant's number. Hey, boss, Ashley answers, always quick on the draw and an asset I'll miss when I start calling New York City home. Don't tell me, she continues. You need your flight moved. Actually, no, I say, more motivated than ever to wrap up things back south before I move north. I need you to find an attorney for me. Did you kill someone and it's not made the news yet? She practices in New York City, I say, ignoring the joke. And her name is Lori. Brunette, pretty, late 20s. That's all you have for me to go on? How many brunette attorneys named Lori can work in New York City? I ask, and I don't wait for an answer. Get me photos of any hits you find, send them to my email, and text me when you do. This is urgent. Okay, she says. I'm on it as soon as I get to the office. Now, I say. I'll buy you that damn Gucci purse you're always talking about if you find her. Hell, I'll buy you two. I need those photos before I leave for the airport. You can't miss your flight, she warns, as if she knows that's exactly what I'm considering, which is to push back my flight. You're in chambers with Judge Connors at 4 o'clock and he's unforgiving. And capable of granting my client, an innocent man who had the wrong attorney before me, a new trial. She's right. I can't miss my flight. If I get the answer my client deserves, I'll continue living between cities for months on end, but I can't walk away from him or Lori. Cole, she warns when I haven't replied. You land at 2. There is no give here unless you go private, and you'll miss your plane before I can confirm I can make that happen this late in the game. Game. This isn't a game, but last night was, and more than I knew. Get me those photos, I say, and remembering the note I add, she spells her name L-O-R-I. Who is this woman? She says, clearly baffled by the limited information behind my order. Just find her, I say and disconnect the line, setting the phone down and pressing my hands to the counter. Fuck, I should have kept eyes on her. I knew she was running, but she didn't want to. She was afraid of something. I needed more time to get her past whatever it was. I'm going to get that time. I'm going to make sure of it. I tear away the towel and return to the bedroom, making fast work of getting dressed, but I don't bother to pack. I'm keeping the room another few weeks. I'll be back, and sooner than planned. I'm about to exit the bedroom when I walk back to the bed and grab the note Lori left for me. I read it again and grimace with the perfect hello she didn't want to ruin with a bad goodbye. All right then, I murmur, we won't say goodbye, but we damn sure will say hello again. I stuff the note in my pocket and head for the door. I already have a car service waiting on me downstairs and waste no time heading that direction. A short elevator ride later, I'm street side and I climb into the back seat of the car, directing the driver to the corner where I met Lori, and have him pull to the curb. I get out with the insane idea I might actually see her. I walk to the exact spot where I ran into her. I walk the whole damn sidewalk, left and right, and a block in either direction, and of course, she's not here, there, or anywhere. I head back to the car and slide into the back seat. Airport as planned. I order the driver when my cell phone buzzes with a text. Photos in your inbox, but there are only 2 Loris who spell their name as you indicated, and none fit the description you gave me. I included all other spellings, and there is only 1 possibility, but she is 32. I switch to my email and open the file, scanning the photos. My Lori is not in the photos. This makes no sense. I think back to our conversations. Holy hell, she never actually confirmed she was an attorney. I have a name and nothing more.
Lori.
What's your dirty secret?
The question is delivered by Daniel, a handsome, familiar man in an expensive suit from the other side of the coffee bar counter. The side without the register, which I know far more intimately than him. I have no secret, I assure him. That's my programmed answer that I've given him every one of the early mornings I've been working here. Only this time it feels like a lie. I do have a secret. I have Cole, and despite my rushed shower and change of clothes after leaving his place, I swear I can still smell him on my skin.
Have a drink with me and tell me,
Daniel presses, keeping to his daily script. Actually, I say, leaning forward and lowering my voice, I'll tell you now. He leans in closer, his eyes light.
Tell me,
he urges. I could say I let a stranger spank me last night, but that's my only dirty secret, and I want it just for me. Instead, I say, you have a girlfriend, thinking of Sally, who joins him here every Saturday morning. He wiggles a brow.
I won't tell if you won't.
Thankfully, a line is forming, and I motion him to the end of the bar. Your regular order is ready, and I charged your account.
We'll invite Sally, he suggests.
No and go, I order, and then shout out, next, to force the issue. He grimaces, but leaves, and I don't really think that he's serious about a hookup anyway. I certainly hope not for Sally's sake, which momentarily conjures a memory of Cole's guttural, I fucking hate him, about his cheating father. My next customer steps to the counter, and I shake off the memory. And the line churns endlessly, it seems, until finally my shift is over. Karen, the coffee-making girl, as she calls herself, makes me a white mocha, and I have about 15 minutes to drink it before I have to change and head to my day job. Cup in hand, I round the bar to find Kat sitting in the corner, where she's been since I avoided her upon my arrival, certain somehow she'd know I've now been spanked. It's a silly notion, but I can't shake it. Nevertheless, she's my boss and friend, and I walk in her direction. "Good morning, my coffee queen," she says, blowing blonde hair